Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
You'd be delighted, Karen, if you just had Katie doing full on attack.
This is the best team I've seen in weeks. Get her up there.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
The Club Championship Show on OTB Sports in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Hashtag the toughest.
You are very welcome along to episode 3 of the Club Championship Show here on OTB Sports, proudly brought to you by AIB. Plenty to look back on and to look forward to on this week's show. Just 7 teams left standing in the race to be crowned the All-Ireland Club Hurling Champions. We will be looking back on the semi-finals in Leinster and Munster from last weekend with 4-time All-Ireland final referee Brian Gavin, who was commentating on both of the Leinster semi-finals last week. We'll also be looking at some of the controversial refereeing calls from last weekend, which have been big talking points across the week so far. Tommy Rooney from the Football Pod will be along to look forward to the last 4 ties in Ulster, Leinster and Munster in the Football Championship this weekend. And Sarah O'Donovan will be with us to look forward to the All-Ireland Camogie Final, where Sarsfield of Galway will be looking to go back-to-back against the 2015 winners Owlert the Balla of Wexford. All that to come. Before we start, let's have a look at the results from the weekend just gone by. A pretty crucial weekend in the AIB Club Championships. We start with the Leinster Hurling Semi-Finals. Clock Ballacolla of Laois into their first ever decider in the province, overcoming Kilmacook Crokes by 116-113. Picky Maher continuing his incredible scoring record, 571 he's now got in the club championships for this year, and he scored 1-8 for Clock Ballacolla. Ballyhale, the All-Ireland champions, going for 3 in a row next year. They pulled off the great escape, really, in O'Connor Park at the weekend. Ballyhale in the end winning by 9 points after extra time against St. Rhinus, 324 to 2 goals and 18. Doesn't tell the full story though. Owen Cody put the ball in the net in the 63rd minute. Ballyhale were 3 points down with the last play of the game. They dropped a 65 in, scrambled a goal, and Ballyhale in the end were very impressive in extra time when they got back to 15 men. In the Munster Hurling semi-finals, the fairy tale year for Lochmore Castellini coming to an end in their game against Ballygunner, the champion of Waterford winning by 211 to 12 points. All the talking was about the two sending off in that one though, Noel McGrath and John McGrath, which we'll talk about with Brian Gavin. And Kilmallock just easing to victory in the end against Middleton of Cork, 19 points to 1 goal and 9. And Cork teams now have won just 1 game in the Munster Club Hurling since 2009. So they were the results from the provincial hurling semi-finals. We had an Ulster hurling semi-final as well. Sloughneil, the defending champions, going through against Dunloy by 1 goal and 18 points to 14 points. And in the AIB All-Ireland Camogie semi-finals, Sloughneil's dream of going for 5 finals in a row was ended by the veterans of Owlert the Balla, the Wexford champions, winning in the end by 2 goals and 15 points to 1 goal and 11, while Sarsfield's into back-to-back finals, the defending champions, kicked on in the second half with the wind in Eden Derry on Saturday as they overcame Drumminch of Tip by 11 points to 4. That game was just 3-2 at half-time, but Sarsfield's very impressive, especially Siobhan McGrath, who scored 7 points for the Galway champions. So they're the All-Ireland Camogie semi-final results, and we had a Connacht football semi-final which was watched by the Football Pod's Tommy Rooney, with Pádraig Pearse's of Roscommon, the 2019 beaten finalist, coming through against Mount Ballymoyloch by 1 goal and 8 points to 1 goal and 7. Tommy Rooney is with us now in the show. Tommy, how are you getting on?
Morning, Will, how are you doing?
Look, all the talk about that game with Pádraig Pearse's coming through were really about the decisions that happened in the last 5 or 6 minutes, which really incensed the Galway champions, and particularly the mark which wasn't given, that then ended up with Pádraig Pearse going up the other end and getting a winning score. And then really ugly enough scenes where players got up in the referee's face at the end of the game, Tom.
Yeah, well, this was a game that had everything. And I actually think when you look at the scoreline and you see 1-8 to 1-7, you're thinking, right, that must have been a poor game to watch. As somebody who loves watching football and loves watching intercounty football at the top level, this was proper December club provincial football. It was a war. I loved it. I thought it was enthralling from start to finish. There were mistakes from both teams. There was mistakes from the referee. But it was just gripping stuff from start to finish. And the scenes at the end were horrendous. There was no excusing it whatsoever. It was actually, it was horrific to watch. And I waited until I got a look at the video later on to make up my mind, because you're in the midst of trying to file a full-time report and get your notes in order, and you look up and it looks like the referee has been attacked. And hands were put on him by a number of players from the Mount Ballymoyloch team. We know that. We've seen the video. The Connacht GA were streaming it at the time, and John Lynch in commentary was running through the whole incident. And you could see it unfold in front of you. And it felt like one of those, I suppose, Martin Sludden moments. which just can't happen in the game. Like, it just can't. Like, and like, yes, the mark is brought up time and time again, that, but the mark should have been given. Like, they were right to be furious, they were right to be upset. Those players have trained all year long for that moment, and it's been taken away from them.
Why do you think the mark wasn't given, Tommy? Because, like, it seemed clear it was outside the 45. Was there any suggestion it hadn't maybe carried 15 metres, or why was it? Because he definitely goes for it. He's on his knees and he's got the hand up to look for the mark.
Just before we get to the mark, I'd like to finish the point I was making in that, like, players make mistakes. Like, I was watching Barry McHugh there going, I tried that game, knew how highly rated he was, and was thinking, right, this fella, he could be making an impact for Galway this year. What? And I'm watching him, and McHugh did loads of good stuff in that game, but Barry McHugh made mistakes too. First man to turn on the referee at the end of the game, as well as you can see a couple of other players coming in. He's right to be furious about that moment. It was an absolute, I don't think there's any excusing the incident from the referee that he made that mistake. Like, it was a big mistake to make, but mistakes happen in a game, you know? And just the scenes that we saw at the end were just horrendous. In terms of the mark, the passing by Daly was top class. The catch from Barry McHugh was so impressive. Mm. He caught it, had the hand in the air, called the mark. Referee just didn't give it. And I think that probably illustrates the problems that we have in our games at the minute in terms of some of the rules. Are they feasible to have, you know, maybe an inter-county game when you have the likes of David Goff and he's got his linesmen and he's got his umpires and they're all kind of clued into the same page and they're all talking to each other. Maybe then you've got a number of eyes. I'm not sure how much help Jerome Henry was getting from his linesmen, from his umpires. Maybe he was. We don't know these things. But there were 5 black cards in that game. There was a red card. There was off-the-ball incidents. There was so much happening in that match that it was just all skewed by the incident at the end when hands were put on a referee, and that just can't happen in our games. Yeah. It just can't happen. Mistakes happen. Players make mistakes. Managers make mistakes. Referees make mistakes. Yes, there are things we can do to help the referees. There are things we can do to probably improve our officials. But, like, it just can't happen. It was horrendous watching what we saw at the weekend.
Yeah. I do want to give some credit to the Mbeli Moylock fullback, who actually went in to try and restore a bit of order as well. He went in to try and get some of his teammates away from the referee at full time. But, like, the thing is, Tommy, I watched back the stream because it was on the Connacht GAA social channel, so the video's up on their Facebook. So after the game, like, obviously I was listening to your reports on off the ball on Saturday, and then when I got a few minutes in the office, I went back and scrubbed back and watched the last 5 or 6 minutes. There was definitely a feeling that Mbeli Moylock felt that they were being hard done by with some of the decisions in the last 3 or 4 minutes, though. They had a free that wasn't given, and they were very angry about that. Like, it almost felt like this was a powder keg that was coming up to the moment that the mark wasn't given. It wasn't like it was just one decision that annoyed them.
I've heard that, Will, and I don't know whether that just happens when you're watching sport, that when things aren't fully going your way, you just feel like it's going against you. Mm. Maybe, like, referees are human. Maybe Jerome Henry had given 3 decisions in a row that were 50-50 and slightly went against Mount Bellew. Like, there were some odd calls, but, like, I saw people complaining about the black card that Barry McHugh got. Like, Barry McHugh scores his goal, and on the replay, when you watch it back, he gets black carded immediately afterwards, and nobody at the time could figure out why he got black carded. But when you watch it back, he pulls the keeper to the ground and clearly screams in his face. Like, you can't do that. Maybe it's a yellow card rather than a black, but, like, that's a borderline decision that the referee made. I think we had Louise Galvin on the show during the week, right? And Louise is obviously Kerry GA footballer, has played international rugby for Ireland. And I had a good chat with Louise off air before she went on, and she said the same on air as well. She was talking about the difference between laws in rugby and rules in the GAA, and how she's a different person on a GAA pitch than she is on a rugby pitch in the manner in which she speaks to officials and how she tries to get away with certain stuff. She learned very quickly in her rugby career. She got 2 yellow cards very early on for holding on to the ball too long. In the GAA, we think we can get away with things. We think we can sway an official. We think you can speak to them a certain way that things will change. The rules in the GAA, I think there's too much grey area there. I think there's too much scope for referees to possibly, whether that's a club level or whatever, a lower level, to possibly sway one way. If you say something to him, he'll say, he'll take a set against you. There's too much talk about that as well. You know, don't open your mouth to the referee because he'll go against you here. That's just opening things up here. Like, there should be laws or rules that they're black and white, like, and that's it. It's a foul or it's not a foul. And, and that's the way it goes. So I don't know if I'm buying that decisions went against Mount Bellew. I'd say if you were to scrub back over it, or if you were to get a referee overview to go in and have a look at those decisions, I'm sure you'd find mistakes on the Pearson side, on the Mount Bellew side. It's provincial club football or provincial club hurling. It's incredibly difficult to officiate because the stakes are so high, and perhaps the know-how in all panels mightn't be as high as it might be at intercounty level. We know how well-versed players are in the rules and what they can get away with at an intercounty level. And maybe just at a provincial level, it's that little bit lower and the stakes are that bit higher.
Well, look, let's get a referee on to discuss what happened last weekend. Brian Gavin is here with us. Brian, how are you getting on?
How are you going, lads? How are you keeping?
Just ask you firstly about the mark, Brian. Is that just an honest mistake that, you know, the mark should have been given, but the officials have called it wrong?
Oh, well, it's hard to say that, you know, it was probably the easiest decision was to give the mark. It was harder not give it, Will. For some reason, I look back at it a few times, try and see, was he outside the 45? He was probably at least 46 metres out. Had the ball travelled 20 metres? Yes, it had. As Barry McHugh, I think it was Barry McHugh to call it, was putting his hand up, and it was probably an element that he could have been fouled as well. I think probably the easiest decision you'd ever get when in a game was that decision to give the mark. And for some strange reason, Jerome didn't give it, and it piled a good bit of pressure on him for the remaining maybe minute or two. But I just don't know, and Jerome Henry's the only one that's able to answer that at the moment, why he didn't give it, because, you know, it was clearly a good piece of play by Barry McHugh, but it was just a very, very strange decision not to give it. And I don't think anyone knows why he didn't give it, Barry himself.
And Brian, just ask you about the fallout from this as well, because Jerome Henry's going to put in a referee's report, and that might be crucially important with some of the suspensions that could flow from this, from the scenes that we saw after the game. What's the actual process from here? Will he write down that such and such a player potentially overstepped the mark, and then the Connacht officials will have to have a look at it, or how does that process work?
Well, what will happen is Jerome Henry will go home that evening and fill out his report and state exactly what happened, word for word, that number 13 from Mylock, Mount Bellew, pushed him, or maybe number 3 or number 4, whoever it was. Maybe the language that was used towards him, he'd make it say he felt for his safety coming off the field. He'll mention about the shorts coming on, maybe helping him, different things. And it'll be up to the Connacht Council then, and then obviously the process then will be Mount Bellew, Mylock, to get the full finding of the referee's report and whether to accept the punishments if they're in the referee's report or to appeal them using video evidence. But I think it's very clear on video evidence we've seen something very, very poor from Mylock, Mount Bellew. I know how frustrated they are. I'd be both sides of the camp at the moment, managing teams and refereeing, and you just can't do what was done on Saturday. It's not acceptable in any sport anywhere. You know, as Tommy says, you know, referees do make mistakes. Now, like, you'll make a mistake in overcarrying and different things, but I think at that level, you know, Connacht senior, I don't think he can be making them huge big mistakes, as in not give a mark for that. Like, you know, whatever about being, you know, early in the game, missing the push in the back, or maybe not blowing it out for taking too many steps, but you can't make a mistake like that really at that level, because, you know, Jerome Henry would have been ref in National Football League games in the last few years, an experienced official. You know, it cost another Mayo man going back years ago, Liam Devaney, in a club game in Connacht as well, and it really put him down the refereeing ladder. And all any referee is trying to do is try and get up that ladder as high as he can and be the best he can, but this will probably put him back a bit. But to answer your question, It'll be on the referee's report now, and it'll be interesting to see what will happen and what the fallout will be from it.
Just switching across codes then to the hurling from last weekend, because like a lot of talking points coming out of the game between Loughmore Castellini and Ballygunner, and understandably Loughmore Castellini were annoyed about the two red cards they received. So just to get your take on the two of them, the first one being Noel McGrath's what I'll call a frontal shoulder, which went into Paddy Levy. Now, credit to Paddy Levy here, he couldn't have seen what was coming, but what Noel McGrath did, you know, the shoulder into someone after a point is scored or the shoulder into someone after a free has been given, there's probably 20 or 30 of them a game, Brian, that aren't given as red cards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the two key areas here was that I think Noel McGrath was after getting a little bit of a bang before that. And I'd have to say the vision from the linesman, that the players, the Ballygunner player, had his back to the linesman. Now, when Noel McGrath went with the shoulder, his hurl was in his two hands, and it went with him. Now, it was only his shoulder that caught him. But I'd say the linesman read it that he went with the hurl as well. And when Johnny Murphy went over to talk to the linesman, that would be an interesting conversation, because I think for any red card, you have to be 100%. You can't be even 70 or 75%. You have to be nearly 100%. The linesman wouldn't be a huge experienced man on big games, but whatever information he gave Johnny Murphy, he obviously said He went with the hurl into the stomach. That's the only thing I can think of, Will, from a refereeing point of view. If it's a shoulder into the chest, it's a yellow card, and you tell Noel McGrath, no, look, hop on, yellow card, and move on.
Because Johnny Murphy would have had to get clear instruction for the linesman to actually dish out a red card there. Like, if you're the referee and you go over to your linesman, you probably want clear instruction that there's actually a dangerous hit before you produce a red card.
Yeah, and in fairness, what the Richie Hogan incident would say on the All-Ireland, and Johnny was on the line that time with James Owens, they concurred for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and they were probably trying to get feedback from other linesmen and referees through the earpiece that time. They wanted to be 100% sure that they got that right. The other day, it was only really a conversation for about 15, 20 seconds. So I'd say the linesman, who, and this is where there's a grey area in refereeing and bringing lads through refereeing. Some of them are a little bit overzealous to get involved in the game and, you know, waving the flag furiously. I was at a game only 3 or 4 weeks ago in Longford, an inexperienced linesman waving the flag, trying to get the referee's attention, you know, nearly trying to become attention. And that's the last thing you want. You know, when you're doing the line, you only call the referee when it's a line ball, you go in for a 65-45 and you report yellow or red cards, but you have to be 100% what you're reporting to the referee. If not, it drags down the whole team of officials. And, you know, Johnny Murphy got a lot of slack, I'd have to say, on Twitter. And I suppose one thing on that is Johnny gave 50 frees maybe 3 years ago against Dublin and Wexford. And that name has sort of fallen around Johnny that he's a fussy referee. Mm. Even though, in my opinion, he has tried to work on his game the last couple of years and has had some fine games. But that name of Johnny Murphy being fussy will go with him now for a good while, because the likes of, we'd say, Pat McEnany or Dickie Murphy years ago, they had the name of letting the game go, you know. And that always stuck with them, even if they had so many frees.
Well, look, Tommy.
So we're making the point that, like, hurling, right, we're talking about grey areas here in GAA and the rules and stuff. Like, in hurling, it's you're encouraged to give a hit, like. When we talk about rugby and the laws around rugby, like, rugby is too physical a game, the power, the hits that are allowed. But in hurling and football, it's nearly, you get away with a jab of a hurl, or you get away with a shoulder here, you try and push the boundaries. Let's call it spade a spade. Noel McGrath mistimes that shoulder. He does hit Paddy Levy in the chest. It's very, very different to how John Small mistimed his shoulder against Owen McLaughlin. But we had a big conversation around safety and sport around that as well. If McGrath had hit, you know, Levy a little bit higher up or something like that, like, are we? I know it looked like a yellow card more so than anything, but, like, he does mistime the shoulder. So I think that was kind of lost a little bit as well. Like, it wasn't just the shoulder that he got done for. It wasn't a shoulder-to-shoulder tackle.
Yeah, I think the fact that his opponent is looking the other way when McGrath makes contact as well doesn't help either. Like, you would definitely let that flow, Brian, I think, if they were two lads who were eyeing each other up and they both go and shoulder each other.
Yeah, the Ballygunner man just got caught unawares to it. And, you know, people were saying he died. He didn't die, no. He got his shoulder into the chest and he was knocked to the ground. You know, the other incident, obviously, with John McGrath is a little bit different.
Well, to be honest, Brian, I thought that one was ugly, right? Because for me, Ballygunner win that game, who was 15 against 15. Desi Hutchinson was brilliant throughout the game and I thought that they were the better team. But if the penalty is scored, Loughmore Castellani get that back to a point, and God knows what would have happened from there till the end of the game. And, like, Barry Coughlin's a big teeth tuck defender who's got the ball in his hand. McGrath, all right, he slaps it out of his paw, but generally, like, it wouldn't have been a red card offence. But some of the Ballygunner players ran straight to the umpire to make sure that John McGrath got a red card. They're not the kind of thing you want to see, really.
No, and maybe just a couple of points before we talk about that, Will. I think Johnny Murphy was thrown at halftime by that red card incident. I'd say, you know, people say you might know what's going on halftime. You'll hear people talking and some of the umpires may have phones and you'll pick up what's going on, whether you're right or wrong. And that game was on telly. And, you know, Ballygunner got away then with their second goal because I can't think of the centre forward's name. He just charged his opponent straight into the chest and they got the goal out of it. But to go back and talk about the other end, and that's why I think Johnny was thrown a little bit. I really didn't think it was a penalty in the first place. Hmm. Barry Coughlin picked up the sliver, was walking back with, naturally enough, John McGrath gave him a tap in the hand to get the sliver back to take the penalty. Barry went to the ground like he was shot. What's not acceptable in the game and what's creeping in is the two Ballygunner players running to the umpire. Now, there's a couple of ways this can be stopped. There's a yellow card there for feigning injury, which needs to come out from referees. If, you know, if I was the referee there and I saw Barry Coughlin going to the ground, and which I had a good view, which Johnny would have, I would have issued Barry Coughlin my yellow card for feigning injury. And I would have booked both lads for remonstrating with a match official running in to try and get players in trouble and bothered. The referee has the tools to deal with all this, and it would be stamped out. And another incident in Clock Ballacullagh game the other night, when Clock Ballacullagh were well on top, the fullback went down for Kilmacud in New York, pretending his contact lenses were down, and Clock Balakullagh done in the second half with an injury. That's creeping into the game. How can we slow it down when we're when other teams getting a purple patch? But the referee has the tools to stop this, lads, and it needs to stop.
All right, let's have a chat about some of the other games then, aside from the decisions we were talking about. Like, Kilmallock of Limerick win really comfortably against Middleton of Cork. Michael Houlihan, 11 points for Kilmallock. They pretty much had that game won at half-time. Very comfortable victory. They go on to play Ballygunner now in the Munster hurling final. You were at the two semi-finals, Brian. You were covering the Clock Ballacolla against Kilmacud game for Midlands 103, and you were doing the second game where Ballyhale won against St. Rhinus for Leinster GAA on Sunday. I'm going to ask you about Ballyhale Shamrocks first, Brian. They were in real trouble, like 3 points down, a 65. I saw someone joke on Twitter, they call it a Ballyhale Mary, where they put the ball into the area where they could get a goal. TJ Reid, who had been very well handled by Ben Kinley throughout the game, breaks the ball, and Owen Cody's there to flick the ball into the net, effectively gets them out of jail. Now, to their credit, when they go back to 15 men, they win an extra time by 9 points. But we came very close to the reigning All-Ireland champions going out last Sunday.
Well, last Sunday, was if there was that many talking points in a will, it was a fascinating game to be commentating and to be at, actually. You think after 7 minutes, oh, this is going to be an absolute onslaught. Rhinus were 5 or 10 yards off the men. Ballyhale were just hurling them off the field. The movement off the ball was unreal. It was 2-3 to a pint after around 7 or 8 minutes. And then the first water break sort of came, and Ken Hogan and the boys had serious words with their players. And they pushed up and they got tight. And they got back. Luke O'Connor got a fantastic goal, and they got within 3 points of Ballyhale. And then an incident happened over on the stand side with Mahi Maloney, Joe Cuddity. I thought he was very, very unlucky, to be honest with you. Mahi Maloney.
That's been reviewed at the moment, Brian. Is there a chance that red card might be reversed for this weekend?
It could be. The only thing that might go against Joe Cuddity is, you know, we've in the last year or two, and Tommy has spoke about it earlier, anything maybe in the head. And if the video shows that, as when Mahi Maloney came off the ground, if he caught him in the head. Now, he was just his momentum took him into Mahi Maloney. And again, the referee spoke to the linesman and he issued a red card. But that was a huge turning point. And Rhinus were only 3 points down at half time. And Stephen Wynne gave an exhibition of how to use the spearman in the second half. And Ballyhale actually were going nowhere. And Rhinus cruised back into their lead, 3 points in front. And then, as you said, in the last minute, their hearts were broke. A ball in. TJ Reid had possession. I thought in the commentary he got. When we look back, it looked like Colin Finley may have got hold to it, but it was Owen Cody. And, you know, the body language then from Rhinus going off, knowing right well that Ballyhale were back to 15 men for the second half. It was heartbreaking stuff. But Ballyhale are unreal. And just, Will, an amazing stat that was given to me Sunday. Ballyhale in Leinster Club Championship in All-Ireland have now won 28 games out of 31 in the Leinster and All-Ireland Club Championship. That's insane. They're only founded in 1972. Such a record.
Yeah, they're unbeaten now in 4 years as well. It just goes to show how good they've been in recent times, possibly even the best of all time. They've got a chance to win their 11th Leinster title this weekend. They'll play Clock Ballacolla. Brian, you were at their game on Saturday. Picky Maher, like, he's in remarkable form. 571 he's scored so far this year for his club, Clock Ballacolla. And again, like, he scored a great goal in the first half, 1-8 and all. People might look at the result and think 3 points, but to me, Clock Ballacolla were a little bit better than 3 points, the winners in that one. It was the goal from Kilmacud that maybe gave them a bit of a scare late on, but they were the better team overall.
Absolutely, Wayne, and I was really, really lucky that I could commentate on that game. Jack Nolan was out, and from the word go, it was probably one of the easiest games to commentate because down in front of us were the Clock Ballacolla supporters, and as anyone knows, a very, very small area, but the atmosphere was absolutely electric Saturday night in O'More Park. But the work rate, I don't think I've ever seen a club team put in such a shift in work rate and commitment that I've seen Saturday night. And as you said, they were way valued for more than a 3 point victory. Kilmacud got a goal out of nothing through Ushin O'Rourke in the second half. And I said to myself, God, this will sicken Clock Ballacolla now after being the best team. They never batted an eyelid. They stuck to the game plan. Like, the brilliant forwards, like Picky Maher, as you said, Jordan Welch was fantastic. Stephen Bergen got 3 points. Willie Dunphy, you know, the experienced player. Like Mick McAvoy in the half back line. Darren Maher at fullback. They had every matchup spot on their night, and Kilmacud were absolutely sickened because, in my opinion, looking at.
Well, I think we've just lost Brian there, but
Clock Ballacolla.
Hi, Rare. But I tell you what, we'll hear a little bit from Clock Ballacolla. Brian, thanks a million for joining us on the show, firstly.
You're very welcome, lads.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian also spoke to Clock Ballacolla fullback Darren Maher after the game. This is what Darren had to say. He's saying they're the first Laois team in 20 years to go to the Leinster final, but they're not going to make up the numbers this Sunday.
Well, I don't want to get to Croke Park. I want to win in Croke Park. I want to give a performance. I just think that people say, oh, you're in bonus territory. That's a lot of rubbish. We're fully entitled. We're after beating the Wexford and Dublin champions now. You know, Rhinas or Ballyhale, whoever's the other side. We're not going to make up numbers. We've too much pride in this club and this community, just to say we've played in Croke Park. Do you know, you can play in Croke Park at half time if you want to when you're six years of age, but to be competing at the top level, we want to be there. And you know, I firmly believe that we've been good enough over the years, we just haven't really performed when we should have. And I just want to do everything we can now to get this week right, to hopefully do a good job next Sunday, keep the pride in our community, that they know that we'll give everything and we know that they'll give us everything from the stand in Croke Park.
300 members in Cluck Ballacolla, Tommy, that is a fairy tale story. You win two Leinster Championship games, you do it in a 3-week period, and you get to go to Croke Park in a year where the finals are there as well. As Darren Marr was...
Great interview, by the way.
As Darren was pointing out to Brian there on the commentary at the weekend after the game, is that it's for them, it's not about the great day out and going to play Ballyhale. They want to go and actually have a right good cut at this now.
Yeah. And why wouldn't they? Look, we were talking recently about Mullinocta, half a parish, down on the other side of it. These small parishes that are able to pull off these incredible feats, they're some of the greatest stories that we have in the GA. There is no messing with that. The small parishes, the little clubs that can dream and it can get to the All-Ireland final, that's the kind of stuff that we miss. Do you know when we're watching Dublin, the incredible Dublin team win six All-Irelands in a row, there's a stock in that, or the great Kilkenny team in Hurling that does it, or Kerry always being there. But in the club championship, these smaller clubs, these smaller parishes, they can go from a parish of 300 people to an All-Ireland title. So, you know, you'd wish them all the best in Croke Park this weekend. And as Darren Maher said there, you can be six and play at half-time in Croke Park, so they're not there to make up the numbers.
Yeah, David against Goliath in many ways. But Colin Fenley went off injured last week in Tullamore. Joey Holden was holding his shoulder at the end of the game. We'll have to see what happens with that red card appeal. There could be some bumps in the road before the final.
How many lives did the Kilkenny champions get? You know, they got by
Hackett's
last
nine,
week.
So
they were close the week beforehand. Yeah, but are we talking about it just all in this year? Are they going to get another chance? I don't know.
Before we go on and chat about the Camogie and take a look at the fixtures coming up this week, Tommy, we didn't really get to chat about who good Pádraig Pearces were last week in the football. Mm. They're through now to a Connacht final. Can they give Knockmore a good fight in this final now? You know, Pearces have got the history of only a couple of years ago being in the Connacht final when they lost out to Cara Finn as well.
Yeah, Pearces are sandwiched between Clonmacnoise and Bridget's, the behemoths of Roscommon football in the last 20, 30, 40 years. And they won their first ever title in 2019, got to a Connacht final against Cara Finn. They had been knocking on the door for years. You'd call them the Mayo of Roscommon club football, bridesmaids. They got to plenty of county finals and they never got over the line. They finally did a couple of years ago. The thing about Pearces is they've had Pat Flanagan as manager for the last couple of years. They've got the four Daly brothers. Ronan, Niall and Connor are integral, and Lorcan is the youngest one that's breaking through, and he's starting now as well. They've had a very settled team for the last couple of years with a good streak of county influence throughout it as well. They play the same way. It's a style of football that I would say suits this time of the year. Very hard to break down. They can get scores from half back up to the full forward line. And Knockmore, the Mayo champions, who are, I think they're still missing Darren McHale, one of their stars. So that game is going to be in Ballina on January 9th, and Pearces will back themselves. Well, they really will back themselves. They're here now, and they weren't fancied, and they won't be fancied, but that's a club that will back themselves.
It's all spread out. People might be wondering why, but I saw Munster GAA tweet Shane McGrath yesterday, because he asked, why are some finals this week, and then they're spread right through over the couple of weekends around the clock in January too. The main reason is that they want to actually give publicity to each final, is the idea. So you didn't want finals to be clashing against each other. So you've got the Ulster and Leinster hurling finals this coming weekend, but they didn't want to have it that say the Munster hurling final would be on the same weekend too. And next thing, there's just a real sandwich for trying to get some actual space out there.
Yeah.
So that's the reason they're spread out for a while. I don't know how you feel, Tommy, if it was you, would you prefer to play weeks back and back and actually have your Christmas? Or would you prefer to have to train all the way through Christmas to get ready for a game on the 9th of January?
I think when you're a player and you're in it, you're tunnel vision, then it doesn't really matter to you. You're going to train regardless of when it is, and you're going to play the game whenever it is, and you're just going to try and get the job done. Ideally, we're obviously dealing with a COVID calendar when you're trying to get things done. So, you know, things have been thrown back and plans have been changed. Ideally, all of this will be wrapped up before Christmas. Who wants to be worrying about training the morning after Stephen's Day? Or Christmas Day
itself, I've heard clubs do before.
Oh, of course they have, Will. Of course they have. And it's just a pity, but it's just the way it is. And I don't think the players are going to worry about it at all. We complain enough about calendars and fixtures and structures, so we know there's a couple of things that are worth fixing there that haven't been fixed yet.
All right, let's have a look at the fixtures then, which are coming up for this coming weekend. Firstly, we've got the Leinster football semi-finals. Owen Shane is going to have updates on these and Off the Ball this coming Saturday. You've got Chamaliers of Wexford up against Naas of Kildare. Port Arlington will play against Kilmacud Crokes in the second semi-final. Both those games are at Croke Park on Saturday afternoon. We've got an intriguing Ulster football semi-final. The first of them is at 6:30 on Saturday, where you've got the Derry-Gonley Harps up against Clann Éireann of Armagh. So they're the provincial football fixtures. Then we've got the Leinster hurling final on Sunday, Clough Ballacolla against Ballyhale, which we were just talking about. We've got the Ulster hurling final between the reigning champions Sláinteail, who are going for 5 and 6 years if they can get victory there. They'll play Ballycran of Down, who last appeared in the final back in 2018 when they lost out, but not against Sláinteail. They lost to Cushendall. And also across this weekend, we've got the All-Ireland Camogie final, which is coming up on Saturday afternoon, and that will be Sarsfields against Owlert the Balla. And that game will be played in Nolan Park in Kilkenny, 1:15 on Saturday. Sarah Dunfin's going to be with us in a moment to look forward to that game. But let's first hear from the Owlert the Balla camp, because they ended Sláinteail's hopes of going to a fifth AIB All-Ireland Camogie final in a row. Huge victory for them, 2:15 to 1:11 against the Derry champions. And veteran Owlert the Balla player Mary Lacey spoke to Liam Spratt of South East Radio after the game.
We were saying that the more games you play, because you're only back after having a baby 4.5 months old, it's a fair achievement. You seem to be getting better and better.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted. We'll have some great girls around me. Poor Aoife, the other wing back, is getting the most of the run in the game. But it's great to be back. There's a great group of girls there. It's good to have, I suppose, experience. But we have some really good young girls, and they get stuck in and they do the dirty jobs. But we're so delighted now. We're in an All-Ireland final next Saturday. It's a great achievement for us and for the club, and particularly the year that's in it. We wouldn't have the opportunity. I must say a special thank you to Colin and our chairperson Patrick and Alina Jacob. They fought tooth and nail to get this competition.
Sure, we'd have this day.
Yeah. And it wasn't, well, I was kind of lucky the way it happened that I suppose if I had went ahead earlier in the year, I would have been missing, but it's great now that I'm back, I suppose. But thanks to those three people and the rest of the management with Colin, they really fought hard.
Sarah Donovan is with us now to look forward to the game. And Sarah, we hear Mary Lacey speaking there. Like, we're talking about Wexford legends and Owlert the Balla legends doing a lot of the scoring last week. You had Una Lacey and Ursula Jacob getting the goals in the first half. You've got Mary back there after a bit of a break during the summer while she was giving birth. And here they are, you know, 6 years on from their last success. And they're down a Sláinteail team who were probably fancied going into last weekend.
I fancied Sláinteail last weekend, and I suppose a bit naively. I shouldn't have, because I've played against Owlert the Balla in 2016 in a Leinster final, and we were 8 points up and they came back and beat us by a point. So never rule out Owlert the Balla. And as Mary alluded to, this championship wasn't going to go ahead only for, you know, a big fight from the clubs involved back in June. We had the clubs going to the DRA looking for resolution, last minute talks, 4 hours of mediation with the Camogie Association, and the two clubs that had made the biggest noise back then, Sarsfields and Owlert, are in the final. So credit to both teams.
Yeah, maybe fitting they get to the final after that, because like, they had really spearheaded it, especially when it came to keeping the agenda about this in the media at the time, because like, it dragged on for a lot of weeks, Sarah. Even before it went to the DRA, you effectively had players and management coming out appealing, saying, look, there's a window at the end of the year, this can surely be played. And it seemed as if the Camogie Association were pretty determined not to play it for quite a spell.
Well, unfortunately for the Camogie Association, Geraldine McGrath, mother of three of the stalwarts of Sarsfields, is on the Ard Cór Law. So the Ard Cór Law obviously dictates what happens within the Camogie Association, and her husband, Michael Hopper McGrath, were very vocal, you know, and I think crucially having Geraldine on the inside, not speaking out of school, probably helped them massively to get this one over the line, because, you know, she's inside the walls of the Camogie Association.
Within the game itself, like, it's a classic start for Owlert to get 1-5 to no score up, and they had 2 goals and 10 points scored by half time. Then, like, the conditions obviously played against them in the second half, and they had to kind of hold on a little bit. But like, Stacey and Shelley Keogh, the two twins, doing a huge amount of damage for them. The only thing is, Stacey's got her wedding coming up on Friday, effectively a few hours before the final takes place. So I think the players are going to have to be remarkably disciplined if they're going to be out in Kilkenny at 1:15 on Saturday afternoon.
I was looking at the Roll of Honour, and Owlert last won it in 2014. Previous to that, they won it in 2011. And there's been three or four clubs since have made a big, have had a big say in the All-Ireland Club Championship. Milford winning three All-Irelands, Shlochneil winning three in a row, and obviously Sarsfield's the latest team. And I think Owlert probably feel like they had a great team, but they didn't obviously, you know, fulfill their potential. And this is why they're back, you know, 7 years later in an All-Ireland final. So I think the Kyos will be quite happy to put the wedding celebrations on ice until Sunday, get the vows out of the way on Friday, and get the celebrations done on Sunday after possibly a big win against Sars.
How important is that big game experience as well? Because when we talk about some of these players like Ursula Jacob and like Mary Lacey, they were around 10 years ago when Wexford were going up to lift the O'Duffy Cup in Croke Park. Like, they've got loads of experience of All-Ireland final day, both the club and inter-county level, or it may be some of their best years are behind them. But to have all that experience going into an All-Ireland final has to be huge.
It is, and I suppose crucially in Camogie, transitioning the ball up the field, the teams that do that really well are very successful. And when you have Mary Lacey at wing back and Kira Story at centre back, as you've had in the last number of weeks, their ball distribution is excellent. And the way that they can, you know, obviously channel the ball through Stacey and Shelley at centre forward and then into the pockets, into Ursula and into Mary, or sorry, into Una Lacey in full forward, they move the ball really well. Other teams in the championship, I've noticed, struggle to transition the ball well. And that's why Owlert have been so good. Equally with Sarsfields, with Niamh McGrath in midfield, channeling the ball through to Siobhan and to Orla. Transitioning the ball makes the game very simple. Shlochneil were brilliant at it. And that's why those teams have been consistent and to the fore over the last 10 years.
And being able to move the ball cleverly this time of year, particularly I was watching the first semi-final on Saturday lunchtime, and it got a bit sticky in Eden Derry. The ground got a bit soft because of the rain and because of the week of bad weather conditions that were there before. Like, if you're able to move the ball around well this time of year, it can be a huge, huge advantage. And like, Nolan Park is going to be pristine for this Saturday.
Well, you're talking about experience as well. I think Mary Lacey knows exactly how Ursula Jacobs likes to receive the ball, and no more so her sister in full forward. You know, Mary is so clever at crossing the ball. It's just picking out pockets of space, and they're brilliant at it. And I suppose that's where the experience comes to play. As I said, it's a really good final because Sarsfield and Owlert are both really good at transitioning the ball. So it'll be a case of, can Anais Kern, can Stacey Keogh outrun Niamh McGrath? You know, can Mary Lacey cut off the space? Can she cut off the supply to Orla and to Siobhan? And that's where, I suppose, tactically, I'm really excited to see how the game will play out.
Were you a little bit disappointed in Shlochneil? We were talking to Tina Bradley last week, and she was saying maybe they didn't get going in the first of the Ulster finals, but played very well in the replay. They left themselves with a lot of work to do when you can see 2-10 in the first half last weekend.
They were 1-5 to nil down very after 9 minutes. And you know what? I saw the goal that they conceded, the early goal. It was a poor puck out. Unfortunately, Camogie tends to let itself down with poor goals, you know, balls dropped into the net. We don't necessarily have the calibre of goalkeeper that you see in the men's game. And a poor puck out resulted in, you know, an interception, a great drive down the middle, and then a quick hand pass off to Una Lacey, and she had to do very little work to put the ball in the back of the net. You don't like to see good teams undone by poor mistakes, and that's what happened, I feel, on Saturday.
So that's one side of the semi-final. Sarsfield's going for back-to-back titles after their victory against Drumminch. They won by 11 points to 4 in the end. They really made good use of the wind in the second half of the game. This is what the Sarsfield's captain and Galway star as well, Niamh McGrath, had to say when she spoke to Galway Bay FM's Tommy Devan after the defending champions' victory against Drumminch.
A brilliant win. I think it was such a clinical, controlled performance in a way, because we were kind of frustrated at half time because I thought we should have been up about 6 points. Really, we were missing an awful lot, but we kept the calm and we kind of showed our kind of experience in the end. But they were a good team, but like, I know, like, we have a short turnaround now, 7 days next Saturday, Nolan Park. It'll be a, like, you see the pitch here now today, it'll be a completely different story, so looking forward to it.
We looked at your defence today. They were, you know, they were in top form all through. Drumminch in the early stages threw everything they had at them, but the girls there, Maria, Kate, you name them, they were coming out with the ball every single time.
Yeah, and that's one thing as well, because usually it's all our forwards who get the kind of fame or whatever, you know, the recognition. but our backs are so tough. Like, you go down there any day, we play a Panama match down in UN, and you're like, oh, who am I on today? Because they're just brilliant as a unit. And you saw there, like, every single one of them was unbelievable. Tara Keane get a ball to Marion Crampy, and Maria was dominating. So yeah, hopefully now we carry that through the next day.
Sarah, takes all types of games to win if you're going to be champions. Sometimes you just got to eke one out. 3-2 at half time, very few scoring chances, a missed penalty for Sarsfields after 13 minutes, but very few goal chances being created. And then, look, they just had to take their scores, and they were well taken, particularly by the McGrath sisters in the second half, when they got the conditions and the wind going in their favour a little bit. But that's the type of semi-final you just ruck out to get to a final, really.
Yeah, and look, I saw Sarsfields play last year in the All-Ireland semi-final against St. Vincent's, and like that, Vincent's missed a couple of early goal chances and Sarsfields held on, and then in the second half just stretched and stretched and stretched, kept finding pockets of space. Siobhan McGrath kept putting over points. That's what they do, they wear you down, you know, and if you don't take your chances against them, then you've Tara Cooney coming out, then you've Marie Cooney coming out, they just settle into the game and just find their way out the field. The ball becomes very sparse for the attacking forwards then.
Sarah, when you talk about
Sarah,
when you talk about Niamh McGrath's influence for Sarsfield, and we know how she plays. Like, how do you stop someone like that in midfield and Camogie? Like, what is the best way for Alert the Ballot to, I suppose, curb her influence?
We'll have to stop getting her on the ball, because what she does it. She's very like Niamh Kilkenny, you know, and basically she's around a ruck. She picks the ball. She finds a pass. She nearly gives a 1-2 and she's gone again. You know, it's almost soccer like in terms of the way they find and create space. What I would say for Niamh, unfortunately, on Saturday, is that she's going to come up against Anais Kern, who scored 1-5 in their game 2 weeks ago, and against Stacey Coe, two great engines, as good engines as Niamh. I wonder, will Niamh be marked out of it in that instance, and then an ace or Stacey get free run to go forward? I think Thomastown naively covered Stacey but didn't cover an ace, and that's where she scored the 1-5. That's probably the area where I think that Owlert could actually benefit and do the most damage in midfield.
If you're a selector, what do? You go player for player then on Niamh McGrath, or what do you do?
Yeah, if it was me, I would put Stacey on Niamh, and I'd let Anais have free run, you know, to score 1-5. Now, Stacey scored, I think, 4 points again the last day, so Owlert are scoring freely from midfield, but I think Anais probably has more pace than Stacey, aligning to her youth, and I would give Anais free rein and have Stacey mark Niamh.
What a period this could be for some of these Sarsfield players too. Like, they went to Croke Park in early 2020, just before the pandemic kicked in, became All-Ireland champions, made the break with Galway last year, All-Ireland championship, and now potentially at the end of the calendar year of 2021, they could be All-Ireland club champions again. Like, this is really, if you're going to make the most of a period when you've got a good group of players, both county and club level, now is the time to make hay, I suppose.
And that's what Orla McGrath said on Off the Ball a couple of weeks ago, you know, this team is in their prime, and that's why they fought so hard back in June to make sure that they would have a 2020 championship. You know, they've won 5 championships in a row now in Galway, as you said, but Athenry have won 12. So the best teams in Galway are still, I suppose, quite a bit ahead of them in terms of the role of honour, and that's why Sarsfields are looking to push and looking to be involved in as many games as they can. They're in another semi-final after Christmas, and there's a very special group of players there. Those, you know, obviously the McGrath sisters. Niamh is carrying a number of injuries, so Niamh will likely be the first one to go. Siobhan will be around for another 10 years, but certainly there's that group of players probably have a window of 4 or 5 years where they can win as much as they can. If you see with Milford won 3 and are now completely, you know, non-existent in terms of All-Ireland championship. Like, it's just, you have to take that window, and Sarsfield are now.
With this final, I think this is a very difficult one to call. With the way that Owlert have been playing in the last few weeks, they've showed really good form. You know, they beat Thomastown, win their 7th Leinster from any of these players, and then they go and put in a really good performance against Lochneil, while Sarsfield's come in as, you know, defending champions and have done nothing wrong over the last couple of years. Killian Whelan's going to be watching this one for us on Off the Ball on Saturday, and providing updates with John and the lads across the afternoon from Nolan Park. But Sarah, how do you call it? Who's going to win?
If I was to be really critical, I would say that Owlert's forwards probably don't have the pace that Sarsfield's forwards have. Sarsfield's forwards have. So Siobhan and Orla have a lot more pace than Ursula and Una. So it will come down to supply. Ursula and Una Lacey do not miss when they get near goal, but they will have to get as much ball into them and as directly as they can to be able to do that. So if Sarsfield's cut out Shelley's runs, Stacey Kyo's runs, and Ace Kern's runs, you could see them being, I suppose, very quiet inside if they don't get the supply. In the other side, yeah, go on.
No, I was going to say, without wanting to sound simplistic here, like when you go to Nolan Park, it's a big wide pitch, it's a really fast sod. If you're a running team like Sarsfield's, that probably suits you perfectly.
The physicality that Oulart do have, I suppose, will help on the bigger, tougher days, on the colder days. A bit of physicality does help, and we saw that the last night, obviously, in the hurling.
Yeah.
If you throw your body in front of the line, you can get a lot done. And I suppose from our left point of view, as I said, 2014, it's a long time ago since they last picked up an All-Ireland. It's a great story. You know, they had a brilliant game against St. Jude's in the first Leinster Championship game. They lost that by four, or sorry, they won that by four, 217 to 213, I think. A big score put up. We're behind against Thomastown, 8 minutes left, and came back against Thomastown. And obviously a big win against Lochneil. So I think they've probably had the better of the exchanges in the last number of weeks. They've gotten more experience. They know more about their team than Sarsfields do.
Yeah, really looking forward. It's going to be a great game. Sarah, thanks a million for joining us on the Club Championship show.
Thanks, guys.
Just a few quick hits before we finish up, because Tommy didn't get to ask you about the provincial football. So give me your quick picks across these games this weekend then. Munster Club Senior Football semi-finals then. We got Austin Sachs coming out of Kerry. We talked about, you know, great scenes for them, bridging nearly a decade of a gap up against Newcastle West, who've had a game in Munster. They beat the Nair by a couple of points 2 weeks ago. Who's going through, Austin Sachs or Newcastle West?
I don't know how strong Munster is going to be this year, Will, coming out of the provincials into the semi-finals in January. I'm leaning with Austin Sachs for this one. But I think they're going to have more than enough for this. The other one is a little bit trickier.
Right, so it's the same Finbar as the Cork against Aeroge of Clare.
Aeroge are a coming force in Clare football, and they were impressive against Loughmore Castellani in the manner in which they came through that game in extra time. The goals that were scored that day were brilliant. They're well worth checking out if you haven't seen them yet. The Aeroge fullback has an iconic celebration to the town end in Cusick Park after that game, after he scores the goal. It was nearly like a Premier League one. So, Finbar's were very impressive coming through the Cork Championship, but I don't know. There's something telling me that Aeroge have a bit more to say in Munster this year. So, I'd be leaning with Austin Stacks and
Aeroge to pull off a shock.
I'm going to call the Bears to go through, right, but I think it's going to be a really good game there between Aeroge and the Bears.
Okay, tentative push towards the Cork champions there. Ulster Club Senior Football semi-final. This is the one I'm really looking forward to this weekend in the football, which is Kilcoo against Glen. You know, Glen coming out of Derry for the first time. Kilcoo, who we've talked about multiple times as, you know, potential All-Ireland contenders for the American Cup when it comes around to the All-Ireland finals. Who are you picking, Kilcoo or Glen?
You're straight in with Kilcoo and Glen. You don't want to talk about Derry, Connolly and Clonair?
No, we'll talk about that in a second, but go on. This is the big one.
Like, we were talking to Carol Kane a couple of weeks ago on the Club Championship show, Will, and we were asking them, have Glen proven themselves yet? Like, they're up there as joint favourites for the, or maybe they're a little bit behind Crokes for the All-Ireland title at the end of the year, and they breezed through Derry. They were very, very impressive against Gostown. I'm going to lean with Kilcoo for this one. I just think Conor Laverty, the Johnson brothers, I just think they're gonna do a bit of damage this weekend, that Mickey Moran's gonna pull off a bit of a coup here, and I think Kilcoo are gonna get by them.
All right, Saturday night then, you mentioned it. Derry Gonley, who we talked about, you know, five of the last 6 years, they've come out of Fermanagh. They took out Tramore of Tyrone in the last round. They go up against Clon of Armagh in the other semi final. That's the Saturday night game on the TV. Who are you picking, Tom?
I'm gonna pick Derry Gonley Harps, but Clon Éireann have been one of the stories of the Club Championship this season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pull off a shock. But Derry Gonley Harps are a very, very strong club side that have come through from Anna, I think, five of the last 6 years. So I think Derry Gonley is going to be Derry Gonley Kilcoo in the Ulster final. What about you? Are you going to pick a team here, Glen or Kilcoo?
Yeah, I think Kilcoo might just edge it, but again, for me, that's game of the weekend. I do fancy Derry Gonley a little bit in the other semi-final on Saturday. And then I'll give you my picks for the Leinster club. I think Kilmacud will just have enough for Port Arlington, but I've been warning you and warning everyone that this Port Arlington team, when they get going, they've had quick starts in their last two games. For a lot of their players, they would have played for Laois at various different levels at Croke Park, so I don't think that's going to worry them too much about going to Croker, and I think they enjoy open spaces anyway. I can see Port Arlington giving Kilmacud Crokes a good run, but I think Kilmacud will just have a little bit too much for them in the end. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if I got another I told you so text from Will O'Cannon at halftime of this game.
You get that,
Port Arlington racing to a lead, yeah. So, yeah, it'd be. I'm not sure why I'm going to call this one.
And then we've got the other one, which is Chamaliers of Wexford against Naas of Kildare.
Well, the Naas story is just something that's just been incredible to watch this year. Like, what a club. What they've done in both football and hurling has just been so impressive. So, what way are you leaning? Are you leaning on Naas in this one?
I've been impressed by Naas in their two games so far. Like, they probably shouldn't have beaten Tullamore in the first game, other than the fact that Aaron Levy brings the ball over his own line with the very last play of the game. But they were really good the last day, and they've scored 7 goals in the two games so far. So they've got plenty of firepower. You know, Chamaliers have obviously got to a semi-final where they probably wouldn't have been expected. I think the other side of the draw is a little bit more top-heavy this year with the way that it worked out. But I kind of give a lean towards Naas. I think we're going to have a Naas and Kilmacud final.
Yeah, Kilmacud, like Kilmacud are coming through the Port Arlington game. I think Paul Manning is going to have enough. They're not going to get caught this time. They aren't going to get caught like they did a couple of years ago against Mullinocta. But yeah, it is the stronger side of the draw there in the football, yeah.
Hope abates, though, for the underdog in all the games going into this weekend. Don't forget that Owen Chain will be at the two games in Croke Park, 3:15 and 5 p.m. Chamaliers against Naas, and then Port Arlington against Kilmacud at 5 p.m. He'll be providing updates across the day on Off the Ball. And Killian Whelan will have updates from the All-Ireland Camogie final. That starts at 1:15 in Kilkenny. So stay tuned to Off the Ball on Saturday, and of course on Sunday for updates from all the games on Sunday afternoon too. We will be back next Wednesday with the Club Championship Show, proudly brought to you by AIB from 10:30.
The Club Championship Show on OTB Sports in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. #TheToughest